I love you.
I love you too, but I don't like you all the time.
That is going to make me laugh now. Ready?
Isn't that awesome? All right. I love that. Can you imagine those four babies all laughing at the same time? Whew, they got their hands full. So, all right. Well, hey, children are the topic in the scripture passage we're going to look at this morning. So I thought that would be a good way for us to get in the mind frame of talking about kids. We're in Matthew chapter 18, and you can turn there now if you're wanting to use the Bibles there. Otherwise, we have it on the screen. Talk about children and various related things. We were in the middle of chapter 18 last week, so we're going to skip back now to verse 1 because we haven't covered that yet. So this is Matthew 18, verse 1, and I will read it for you. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" He called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this little child is the greatest in the kingdom, and whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. If anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to sin, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of the things that cause people to sin. Such things must come, but woe to the person through whom they come. If your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It's better for you to enter life maimed or crippled than to have two hands or two feet and be thrown into eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and be thrown into the fire of hell." And we'll stop there for a moment. Okay, so children are special to Jesus. We see that here and elsewhere. "If you welcome a child in my name," he says, you welcome me. "But if you cause a young one to be led into sin, a special punishment awaits you." Now, I hate to get super serious right off the bat in my talk this morning, especially on the heels of that fun video. But maybe this comment, when we read something like that from Christ, it may get our brains going in the direction of a subject like child abuse, or human trafficking, or maybe even simply teaching a young person, either by your words or by your example, that sin is okay, or that it's even good to sin. "Woe to you," Jesus says, "it would be better for you to have a large millstone hung around your neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea." And we have in this passage one of those core teachings of the Bible that we struggle with a little bit. You know, the Bible teaches that there is a just God, and that one day all people will be held accountable for their actions. But in the meantime, people are given freedom to choose good or to choose evil. Therefore, many of these children who are precious to Jesus are abused in this world. Terrible things happen to young people and children, and many children grow up being taught by their parents or others close to them that it's okay to sin and celebrate sinful activities and turn away from God. Now, this happens all around us, of course, but I think especially those of us who went on this mission trip here a few weeks back had these kinds of thoughts going through our minds as we worked with the kids in the housing projects in Baltimore. You know, you just wonder what their future is. You know, the reality is some of those kids are going to have their innocence knocked out of them at a very early age. Some will become hardened and jaded through that. And boy, you just wished you could grab a few of them and take them home with you and care for them. Hopefully the light of Jesus that we tried to share with them that week will take hold of their hearts and get them through. But when we think about these kinds of things, you know, especially the extreme things like child abuse and child trafficking, we wish that God's obvious care for children would play itself out in prevention of those awful things that happen. And you know, maybe God is preventing things all the time. I don't know. I kind of assume that he is. but obviously, he is not preventing all such evil actions. There's pain and there's hurt in the world. And as I said, we kind of wrestle with this teaching in the Bible that the judgment is going to come, but it's delayed. Jesus says, "Woe to the world because of the things that cause people to sin. Such things must come. It's just the way it is in this world." But he goes on to teach us that there is a judgment coming. He says that there are two destinations for people when we die. And we see that reflected here. He calls one of those destinations life. Look again at verse 8. If your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life maimed or crippled than to have two hands or two feet. So one destination is called life, and it is worth maiming yourself figuratively for in order to get there. The other destination is called eternal fire. It's better for you to enter life maimed or crippled than to have two hands or two feet and be thrown into eternal fire. And then the next verse, in verse 9, he calls it hell, which the Greek word is Gehenna, which was a trash dump outside of Jerusalem that continually burned. So this is the teaching of Jesus. Judgment is going to come to those who do evil and who do not turn back to God, but it is a delayed judgment. There is a freedom now that's given to all people to choose how to act, but that freedom will come to an end, and there will be a special punishment for those who do harm to children. Let's move forward. Verse 10. "See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I tell you that their angels in heaven always see the face of my Father in heaven." Another warning there from Jesus. There are angels that look out for people. Hebrews 1 says, "Are not all angels ministering spirits sent to serve those who will inherit salvation?" So if not for protection, then at the very least, these angels serve in a reporting role to God of the evil actions perpetrated upon those they look after. And these angels, it says here, have direct access to God, the Father. So beware, evildoers. You will be held accountable. Next, in Matthew chapter 18, we get this fantastic parable we know well that tells of God's great love for each individual. It says this: "What do you think? If a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 in the hills and go to look for the one that wandered off? And if he finds it, truly I tell you, he's happier about that one sheep than about the 99 that did not wander off. In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should perish." There are so many people in this big world who feel so unimportant that they even imagine that they are unimportant and not noticed by God. Have you ever felt that way? Well, these three verses demolish that point of view. The Lord is aware of and loves every individual. Jesus says that here. And he seeks to gather all of us into his protection and his care. This is an important and a great parable from Christ that teaches us who we are and who God is. You are important. You are loved. You are not forgotten. Now, we don't often think about this, but this parable is set in this context of talking about children. And Jesus finishes the parable by saying that God does not desire for any child to take the path away from him like these lost sheep. He does not desire any of them to be lost to destruction. And this makes me think of parents, human parents, who have a child who has strayed off the Christian path, and the heartache that comes from that scenario. Don't you see the same pain in God's heart reflected in this parable of the lost sheep? God is the ultimate parent, you know, and even he cannot keep his sheep from wandering off. Many of them have wandered away, haven't they? He compares people to sheep in this story, and of course, sheep are known for their stupidity. Many sheep wander off when it is unwise to do so, and that's true in the human realm as well. And all of us have resembled this stupidity analogy from time to time, I think, in our own lives. God knows the pain of watching a young one walk down a wrong path. Notice in the Bible that there are times when God simply waits for that wanderer to learn from their mistakes and to turn back to him. Think of the parable of the prodigal son. Sometimes he lets them go and leaves them to learn the hard way, hoping that they will turn back. And then there are other times when God runs after the lost soul, seeks them out, and he pulls them out of danger and back into his arms, as in this example here. Interesting that in both parables, the parable of the lost sheep and the parable of the prodigal son, the reaction at the end is the same to the individual who went down the wrong path but who has now returned. The reaction is not condemnation, but it is love and rejoicing. So are you a parent in a scenario like this? If you are, you're not alone. God watches that scenario play out every single day in the lives of those he has created, and it's clear from this story from Jesus that his heart breaks also. So Jesus is talking about children in Matthew 18, and he got onto that subject because of a sheep moment from his disciples. Look back at verses 1 through 4. They asked a dumb question. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And he called a little child to him and placed the child among them, and he said, "Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." Jesus is nearing the end of his life at this point in Matthew, and he's been teaching these guys about the kingdom for a long time. The fact that they would ask this question is demonstrating that they still haven't got it. "Hey, Jesus, man, we're getting pretty excited about this kingdom that you're setting up, and we're pumped to be a part of it. So tell us, what is the structure going to be like? Who are going to be the nobles and the very important people in this new kingdom?" I'm sure that they had the thought going through their heads, "Well, we got selected to be disciples. Maybe we are going to be those big shots in the kingdom, looked up to and admired." Hey, Jesus is a little more patient in response this time than he was a chapter ago when he said, "How can you be so dull?" He doesn't say that here. He's a little more patient. But he does have to correct them again, and he does so by going to find a child and bringing the child into their midst. And he says, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you'll never enter the kingdom. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is greatest in the kingdom of heaven." You know what, guys? The fact that you were thinking about who is going to be greatest in the kingdom of heaven shows you haven't been listening to me. In fact, you might be in danger of not making it into the kingdom at all if you're thinking along those lines. Pay attention now, disciples. The kingdom is for people who are humble, like this little child. Greatness in the kingdom of heaven is assigned to those who are not seeking it. Be humble. There's a similar passage to this in the next chapter of Matthew 19. Just skip over there and look with me. Matthew 19, verse 13. It says, "Then people brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them, but the disciples rebuked them. Jesus said, 'No, let the little children come to me. Don't hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these.' When he had placed his hands on them, he went on from there." Man, if you were alive in the time of Jesus, wouldn't you want him to touch your child? I'll bet you want that now. Well, the disciples tried to keep order and move the children aside so that Jesus could concentrate on more important things, but Jesus made it clear again here that the children are important. He allowed them to come to him. Makes me think of that picture we saw of the Pope a couple weeks ago where he was giving a speech and a child breaks free and runs up onto the stage to give him a hug, and the security team comes to remove the child, and the Pope's like, nope, you can sit in my chair while I'm finishing this. Jesus said, let the little children come to me. Do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. Now, in that earlier passage, Jesus mentioned humility, the humility of children, and that it needs to be duplicated in our lives if we want to be people of the kingdom. But I wonder if there aren't some other things that would apply. You know, in this in Matthew 19, he leaves it kind of generic. You just need to be like children. So let's think about what children are like. Humble is a good descriptor, but there are other characteristics we can think of. One thing I marvel at with my daughter is joy. You know, there are tears from time to time. There's crabby times. There are naughty times. But I think her default setting right now is just joy. She bounces with excitement and laughter when it is time to play Play-Doh, or when it's time to go outside and play, or when mom says, hey, let's go play hide-and-seek, or when she hears daddy opening the door coming home from work, or when it's time to watch one of her favorite TV shows. There is bouncing and laughter on all of these things. And even when those special things aren't happening, in the moments where daddy and mommy are talking by themselves over in the corner and Maya's just playing on her own, usually she's singing or she's making happy noises or she's talking to her dolly. And just I think children just have there's just a joy in them. It's fun to watch. Similarly, little kids love to discover the world and they love to play. I know I've said this to you before, but I'll never forget that that first moment that Maya experienced the feeling of a warm summer breeze on her face. She was less than 1 year old. It was her first summer. And the look on her face, just of surprise and just ecstasy, is like, this feels amazing. It's discovery. And now, of course, for her, it's the discovery of animals and Disney characters and grass and sticks and rocks and neighbors and new parks to play in, swimming. New experiences and things to learn, and it's all so exciting. Kids love to play, and they love to discover. My daughter loves to have projects to work on. I wonder if your kids did. She calls them projects, and usually it involves moving all of her toys from this side of the room to the other, or taking all of the books down off the shelves and organizing them on the floor. I don't know. She says, I got to do a project, and she gets excited about these projects. She takes joy from these things. Children have innocence too, don't they? You know, there was a time in our lives when we were young where sexuality didn't even come into our consciousness at all, and we were perfectly content. There's a time when we didn't know what stealing was or what abuse was or what alcohol is. There's the time when we just assumed that every person out there had our best interests at heart. Innocence and little children. Children believe what you tell them. That's worth noting. My wife, in a moment, I think she now regrets. I don't think you'll be embarrassed by this, Anna. But Tommy and Maddie Bacon were over at our house, and she was trying to entertain them. You know, they're a little bit older, so you change your tactics a little bit with older kids. And she told them that there was a worm monster living in our basement. And, of course, Tommy and Maddie are old enough to know better, but there was another set of ears listening to that. And this stuck in her head, in my daughter's head. And we've had to explain many times to Maya that Mommy was just kidding about the worm monster. So, little children believe what you tell them. Children also are in complete dependence upon their parents. They have complete trust in their parents. We all know that a child cannot arrange for themselves shelter or clothes or food, but they know they are going to be fed and sheltered and clothed. They don't question where it's going to come from. Mommy and daddy will just do it when the time is right. And finally, children, at least those in good home situations, exhibit peace, I think. And they're free to play and to discover and do all of these things because they are at peace. So do you think that Jesus could have meant any of those characteristics as well when he said that kingdom people need to be like children? He mentioned humility. He mentioned humility specifically. But what about some of these other things? What about trust? Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your paths straight. How about dependence? Give us this day our daily bread. It's a picture we've talked about of ongoing day-by-day dependence on the Lord to be the one who provides what you need. How about belief? Easy to believe for kids. Well, John 3:16, for God so loved the world, he gave his one and only Son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. Belief is important. Do you have a childlike belief in God? You know, I think there's times to be vigilant and discerning and to question things in life. I absolutely do. We know that children can believe things that are incorrect, like worm monsters, all right? So we don't want to believe Christianity just because somebody told us. We do want to spend some time searching and studying and looking into whether or not it is true. We want to believe Christianity because it's true. So there's a time to question. But I think maybe Jesus is saying here that there is also a time just to rest in simple acceptance, like a child does, a time to stop overthinking it and just to trust God in the circumstances of our lives, a childlike belief. How about innocence? Matthew 10:16, be as shrewd as serpents and as innocent as doves. And Paul says in Philippians 4, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, these are the things you're supposed to be thinking about. Innocence. Peace. Now, we've talked about that one a lot. It's a fruit of the Spirit, and we've seen over the months that it's a major descriptor of what the life of a Christ follower should look like. How about joy? Romans 15:13, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him. You know, there's an order to this, I think, and you can see it in that last verse there. When we trust God, like little children trust their parents, when we, like little children, do what their parents depend upon God to provide for us, to look out for us, and ultimately to make things right for us in the end, then we can have peace in our hearts, even in the midst of difficulty. How would you behave if you knew that everything was going to turn out okay? Trust and dependence lead to peace. And then when you have peace in your life, you are free to have joy. When there is peace, you're free to take delight in the simple blessings of the world like children do. When you have the peace of God in your hearts, you're free to play, like stopping to play pinball at P.K. Egan's, or having people over to play board games in your house, whatever. You're free to take joy from projects, landscaping, gardening, whatever it is that it's a project of yours that you like to do. And I think you're free to maintain a sense of wonder about the world, too. You know, maybe we don't get the thrill that Maya still does from finding a stick on the ground. But there's still so much to discover on this planet. I subscribe to a Christian magazine called Behemoth, and their purpose is to bring to the attention of their readers cool aspects of God's amazing creation. So did you know, this is one example from a recent Behemoth article, did you know that peregrine falcons hunt from very high up in the air? They've got amazing eyesight, and they can see things scurrying around on the ground from very high above. And when they spot their prey, they go into a full-out dive that can exceed 200 miles per hour. It's kind of hard to imagine. They fall upon their prey, and the bird or the mouse, of course, has no idea what hit it. But I think this is actually one of the coolest parts, is that peregrine falcons, in their nostrils, they have a bony little plug-looking thing. It's called a tubercle. And it keeps the air from flowing directly into their lungs. And we're going to show a picture to you of it. Can you see that? You don't need the... Right? Well, I don't need to point out where the nostril is. You can see that. But you see the little plug thing in there. So without that tubercle, the falcons would not be able to withstand the pressure that a fast dive like that can create on a body. And I just think that's cool. You know, All these amazing things that God has done, these intentional designs. And these things are everywhere. There are millions of little things like that for us to discover and just say, that's awesome. And what will he have in store for us in heaven? So, perhaps it is not just the humility of a child that we are to emulate if we want to be kingdom people. Perhaps we are also to trust like a child, to believe and accept like a child does, to depend upon God like a child depends on his parents, to be innocent of evil like a child is, to have peace like a child does, to have joy like a child, to continue to play in our lives like children do, to continue to take pleasure in our projects like children do, and to continue to take joy from the discovery of the world like children do. And there is in this idea some of that living life to the full concept that we talk about here at Calvary. We are looking forward to the goal of where God is ultimately taking us and all he will have for us there. We look forward to the goal of heaven, but in the meantime, let's live this life to the full. Let's discover, let's play. Let me show you a picture now that I think sums it all up pretty well. This is life, I think. Okay, we are the kid, right? God is the daddy. We often have our eyes on earthly things, don't we? And you can see that Maya's direction is down. She's picked up some of the wood chips that we were walking on to check them out. Discovery. So we too are often paying attention to earthly things, matters of this world. Now notice that the wood chips, if you can see it, they're falling through her fingers. Well, isn't that like life? We want to hold on to these things of the world, but they eventually slip through our fingers. We only have them for a short time. But the most important thing for my daughter in this picture is who's... probably shouldn't have used my own kid on this one. is whose hand she's holding on to. All right? She's holding on to Daddy's hand. And even though her eyes are not on me in that moment, she's going to be okay as long as she's holding that hand. You get it, don't you? I'm not going to let her fall off a cliff, run into a wall. Hey, I'm going to lead her on good paths, and that's the point. It's the same in our lives. You know, we spend a lot of time looking down and paying attention to the things of this world, and we have to do that. We have to have jobs. You know, we live in the world. We have to do that. Sometimes we're picking up the wood chips of the world, and sometimes they're falling through our fingers. But as long as we're holding on to the hand of God and following the path he wants to lead us on, in the end, all will be well. Trust the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him. He will make your paths straight. So let's be kingdom people. Let's demonstrate these characteristics of children we've looked at today. Let's be full of wonder and trust and dependence. Let's maintain a playful spirit. Let's be humble and innocent of evil. And let us continue to take joy from the blessings we are given in this life as we simply hold on to his big and good hand. And we allow him to take us where he will. May it be so in our lives. Amen. Amen.